Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So the world's most expensive drug, Libmeldi, is set to become available for use in Ireland following negotiations with the manufacturer on price. The drug is used to treat MLD, which is a rare and life-threatening inherited disease which affects the metabolic system in children. Now, the breakthrough deal was reached following joint negotiations which involved Ireland, Belgium and the Netherlands and the manufacturer, Orchard Therapeutics. In a moment, we'll hear from Professor Michael Barry, who's clinical director with the Centre for Pharmacoeconomics. But first, Les Martin is here. Now, Les, people might have heard you speak before about the sad loss of your son, Cathal, to MLD. Your younger son, Ciarán, also has been diagnosed with the same condition. So today is a big day for you and for families like you.
Yeah, Claire, thanks for inviting me on. I'm very glad today. Yeah, this is a huge piece of news for the community at large. It's been an international effort, as you say, the Benelux of countries. But beyond that, this same effort has been ongoing in other European countries. And collectively, the MLD community, I suppose, worked together in putting forward the case for the patient's voice and the family's voice into these discussions, in the hope that humanity and sense prevails in them. And as I say, I'm delighted to hear this piece of news today because it's the culmination of a few years now of concerted effort by all of those people involved.
And you've seen this drug working because you were part of it, you and your family were part of a trial.
Yeah, so we're actually the only family who've ever received this treatment here in Ireland. Unfortunately, there are six or seven other families living in Ireland currently with the condition, but for all of those, the therapies have no benefit once the condition has progressed beyond a certain point. So in our case, we had two sons, and both were diagnosed with the same condition at the same time. Our boy Cathal, he passed away now 3 years ago. He was six when he died. But he was born healthy and fit and happy and was a great little boy, a gorgeous little guy, until, you know, about the age of a year and a half, two, he started to decline a little and struggled walking and hitting milestones and things. And it took us almost a year and a half to have him diagnosed fully with MLD because of its rarity. There's maybe one case a year in Ireland. And at that point, the disease had progressed so far, you know, he was losing the ability to speak and swallow, and the treatment wouldn't have been effective for him. So Cathal ran his tough road through MLD, untreated, and as I say, he passed away 3 years ago.
At the age of
six.
So at the time that he was diagnosed then, you said your other son was diagnosed at the same time, is that right?
Yeah, luckily for Ciarán, his brother sort of led the way. Ciarán was only 11 months when Cathal was diagnosed, so they immediately checked Ciarán as well, and it was the same. So, as I said, we didn't see it until he was a year and a half or so. So Ciarán immediately was eligible for this trial that we found out about in Italy, in Milan. It was our only shot at beating this terminal condition. There was no question about it. It was life or death. So we travelled immediately to Milan and were eligible for this treatment. We stayed there for almost 9 months. He went through the gene therapy treatment. That's 6 years ago now, and it stops the disease in its tracks. Mm-hmm.
So it arrests it at the point where the drug is delivered. That's it. It stops progressing.
So Ciarán was just over, well, he was 13 months. He was just over a year when he received the therapy. So he has some nerve damage and he has some mild disability in terms of walking. You know, he has his own way of getting around, and he's stable and hasn't declined in any way since he received his treatment, and his prognosis is very good, and he's so happy and healthy and going to school, and we're so grateful for that opportunity. It was a trial at that time. It worked. It's been proven to work in other cases. The people who attended the trial in Milan came from all over the world, each of them with two children. It's impossible to detect the condition really until it's too late. It's only the second sibling that can receive the treatment. So therein lies the problem with MLD, and what the thrust of my advocacy and campaigning for 5-6 years now is that we need to include a screening program for MLD at birth. It needs to be added to the newborn screening heel prick test in order to identify the condition early and treat it with this gene therapy, which will save that child's life.
Can you treat the child if they're diagnosed at birth? Can you treat them when they're very, very small?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's happening now. So there's screening programs now running in a couple of states in America, in Germany, in Italy, and in northern France. They're doing a pilot of screening for these children. In Germany, a huge success. They introduced a pilot screening program. They identified three children, and all three of those children have been saved.
Right.
So it's the Cahills of this world that we want to save. The Chirons only come around very, very rarely. As I say, we're the only ones in 7 years to be actually eligible, and there's been other diagnoses, maybe one a year.
Mm-hmm. You said earlier that it's only the younger sibling can be treated. Can you explain that to me?
Well, it's just that when it becomes visible, and as I said, Cahill was missing milestones, and we began to see he was slowing down in many... It takes a huge amount of diagnostic sort of testing because of the rarity of the condition. It's not something that's generally suspected. And by the time the diagnosis comes around, if the child is too symptomatic, the therapy is not effective. It shouldn't be used.
Mm-hmm.
It's really has to be preemptive. It has to be, you know, it works best when the children are young and unaffected by the condition. Now, there's different severities of the condition, and that's a complicated topic. Mm-hmm. But
is it a tough treatment for the child to go through?
Yeah, it's essentially it's one dose of a little size of a little tea bag. I was describing it like that before. But what they do is they, first of all, they have to go through a kind of a chemotherapy process. They have to break down the immune system. So that was the most difficult part. And we were in Milan for that, and we were in an isolation room in the hospital there for months with Ciarán while Cahill was very ill. Myself and my wife alternated between the two, one in a hotel room in Milan with our daughter Holly, and the other in looking after Ciarán. But anyway, Ciarán was sick because of the preparation for the treatment. But what they do is they extract stem cells from the bone marrow. They take away to their lab. They introduce, it's a genetic engineering process. They introduce a piece of genetic code into those cells, and then they reintroduce them to the body. And then the body, you know, it propagates through the body, and that enzyme that they were missing, it's such a simple little, just a single enzyme of one of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, you would think it does nothing. But when it's not there, this disease slowly progresses. But it generates that enzyme.
Okay.
And the child, you know, grows up from there on.
And when did you know that it had worked?
We didn't. As I said, it was a trial. It was the only shot we had. It was a 50-50 sort of thing. We went through the therapy and the stay in Milan. We came home. Ciarán was recovering from the therapy. It wasn't a straight road for him. Cahill was continuing to progress in his illness. We just had a bit of hope. That's where we were. We had no hope in a terminal diagnosis for two of your boys on the same day. And then to be given that glimmer of hope that we might be able to save one, well, that was enough for me and Linda to go for it. And we just let time pass, and Ciarán recovered from that therapy. And as I said, he's been stable, and he's thriving now.
Which is great, but you've got to, you know, when you're telling me that he's great, I'm just thinking about Cahill all the time, and I'm thinking about Holly and Linda and yourself and what your life has been like. I mean,
it's been an extremely difficult couple of years for the Martin family. I'm glad to say now, I wouldn't like to paint too sad a picture. We're very happy now, and it's been 3 years since Cahill passed away. As I say, like, we have a normal life, and we're very grateful for what we have because of this therapy. But there's no doubt it was a tough couple of years. And I'd say, on air here, thanks to my family and the community in Rathnew and Wicklow and everyone who knows us there who were supportive at that time.
But also, look, isn't it great that, you know, due in large part to the fact that you've spoken out about this, that we're here today marking the state agreeing to supply this drug to other families who will find themselves in this position in years to come.
It is great. I'm very proud of my own son's role in all of this and others. Mm-hmm. I think the Kenny family in Ballinasloe, their boy passed away only a month ago, but these little guys who didn't make it, their legacy, I suppose, and the change that we'll make from this generation on, I hope that they're amongst the last to die of MLD in this country. And the solution is two-part: approval of this therapy and the introduction of screening, which is a very strong case now, and I'm going to immediately focus on working on resolving that.
Are you pushing an open door there when it comes to that campaign to have the test done at heel prick stage?
Yeah, well, there's an open call for submissions of newborn screening additions by the National Screening Advisory Committee. I'm very happy now. This is very timely because the closing date for that is the 1st of March, and now the availability of this therapy and additional, you know, reports and research that's been recently published, it makes it, in my book, an open and shut case in relation to now we have a therapy. It's of no use. It will be of no use if we don't detect these children early. And that's
so
the key to this.
So why not do it?
Yeah, no. And I believe, I thank the... spoke with the minister this morning. We've been working on this for a couple of years and he's very much aware that that's my focus now. It's a good day for us, a step forward, but it's only halfway to the finish.
Yeah. Okay, well, as I have Professor Michael Barry on the line as well, Clinical Director for the Centre for Pharmacoeconomics. And Michael, you were involved in the decision to make the drug available in Ireland, and we heard that it was a joint negotiation with the drug company and a number of countries, including Ireland. Will you tell us a bit more about how the process worked?
Yeah, this is called the Benelux process, and Benelux involves countries like Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Austria, and now Ireland. And arose in 2018, and the idea was that for high-cost drugs, and particularly for rare diseases, you would be able to share scientific information, joint assessments, and price negotiate. So, yes, we participated in this. We did the economic component. That's the National Centre for Pharmacoeconomics. We did the economic component of this assessment and published the results in September 2022. And our recommendation at the time was that we would like cost effectiveness to be improved. And usually what that is that means is that you would like the cost to be reduced and render it more cost effective.
Mm-hmm. Just to let people know, Michael, the original price of the drug, the one-off dose, as described so well by Les, it was close to €3 million.
Yeah, it was. And when you added in all the other costs, it slightly exceeded it. And I suppose that just shows you, Claire, the challenges that we're facing all the time. Prior to that, we had Zolgensma for spinal muscular atrophy. That was around $2 million. Now you're looking at a drug at $3 million. And I've no doubt we'll see a drug that's going to be $4 million and $5 million in due course. This is the way and this is the trend that we're seeing. So placing huge demands on the healthcare systems. Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side of that, you've heard Les speaking there, and I know you're aware of the difference that it makes to people if they can access this drug. So, you know, we know that is that dilemma that you face.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the challenge, isn't it? It's trying to balance the cost and it's trying to balance the outcomes. And then the whole reason you do this anyway, I mean, the basic reason of trying to evaluate these drugs is this fundamental question: would you be, you know, what about other areas that you're not going to invest in because you're going to invest it in a particular drug? But absolutely, I mean, it's great to hear this news. And I think what's really reassuring is to hear Les' description of how Ciaran is doing, because let's be clear about this. The trials were low patient numbers, open trial designs and so on, so quite limitations there. And there's uncertainty. It has to be mentioned that there's uncertainty in terms of the long-term outcomes. But look, it's great to hear that Ciaran is doing well. And look, it is. It's fantastic news that this drug is now made available.
So this partnership with Belgium and the Netherlands, that clearly gives us a stronger hand in negotiations. Is it a model that you'll be pursuing now?
Yeah, that was the whole idea of this. when it arose, in the sense that if you look at it, if we're negotiating, we're a country of 5 million. If you include the Benelux countries, you're probably looking at a 50 million cohort negotiating. And yes, I suppose the thing is as well that while we do the assessments, then everyone has to agree that it is appropriate to purchase a particular drug. But yeah, I mean, I think it's early days for Benelux. I mean, we've looked at other drugs such as I say, Zolgensma. But I think that we'd be encouraged by this and certainly would continue with it.
Why would you only use that model for the very high cost drugs and not all drugs?
Not all drugs, Claire, because essentially it's resource intensive in the sense that you can imagine getting units like ourselves from various countries, which it's going through the data as a group rather than one. It's probably more efficient if you do it as a single centre. But and then, you know, the volume of drugs we're seeing every year. I mean, we review something like 90 drugs a year. I don't think it would be possible for all five countries in Benelux to get together to review 90 drugs a year. I just don't think, from a practical point of view, that would work.
Mm-hmm. So depend on how much you'd be likely to save, I suppose.
Well, yes, indeed, and it would depend on how much resources you'd have in terms of scientific personnel. But at the moment, it's reserved for very high cost drugs and predominantly for rare diseases.
Okay, and you heard Les mentioning there that he's campaigning now for children to be diagnosed at birth with the heel prick test. Is that something that you factor into your calculations, that we may be seeing more children diagnosed with this condition as we identify it?
No, we did. This was obviously we were aware of this, but in the actual cost effectiveness analysis, it was based on an estimate of the number of patients you're likely to see. You're absolutely right. If you screen, you're likely to find more people, and then obviously your costs would go up. But look, you know, if you're getting good health outcomes, you can justify such a process.
Okay. Well, Les, I want to thank you for coming in, and I wish you well with the rest of the campaign to
thanks,
have
Claire.
This identified at heel prick test stage. Thank you very much for talking to us, and also my thanks to Michael Barry. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.